Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Fantasy Foot Beer Podcast. I'm James Kemp, joined as always by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Dr. Michael Stewart. Dr. Stu, what's up, bud?
Hey, James, what's going on? I'm feeling pretty good tonight. It is the last couple of days before there is meaningful football to be played. I can tell you here, we're recording on Tuesday. Tomorrow, all through work is going to be horrendously painful. I can already feel it. I am so ready for Thursday. So looking forward to Thursday's matchup. Of course, we're going to talk about week one this week, but it's going to be chill today. Looking forward to talking about drafts, see how everybody's drafts went, and look forward to the rest of the year, James. But first, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing really well. You know, I'm kind of just coming down still from the weekend. It was the biggest draft weekend of the year, and it felt like it. And Stu, you were at my house this weekend.
Sure was.
And all of our friends were up, and we had our draft and our rules meeting and all that. And then I went to a concert in Soldier Field, and all of it has just been really fun and also a little bit exhausting. Indy's felt it too. Indy the dog is sitting in the background chewing on his pirate chicken. Just all day today, because Kelsey was back at work. He was with me anywhere I went. He would find a way to stick his head in my lap and fall asleep. So he was very cuddly, very cute, and I'm sure he will decide not to be a Sunni as he realizes I'm recording a podcast, so he'll find something to squeak or bark at. But I'm excited to recap our drafts, talk a little bit about week one, and, you know, get ready for this beast of a season in front of us. So, Stu, let's go ahead and kick things off. Let's talk about news. And one more time for us, you are the foremost expert in this particular subject. So I will ask you one more time before the season starts, what's going on with Najee's eye?
Well, it's honestly hilarious. If you guys have not seen, he had his first, you know, video interview with the media answering questions, and it was just the funniest thing. I looked at it, watched maybe 5 seconds of it, but he's wearing gigantic sunglasses. We still have not seen the eye. We don't know what he looks like anymore. If he has an eye patch, it could be underneath those sunglasses, but he has been cleared for contact, and he's gearing up to play in week one, which I know a bunch of Omarion Hampton drafters and owners and managers are all groaning and screaming and clawing at their eyes and ears, but he's supposedly going to play. Those of you that got him really late in drafts, get excited for mediocre production and probably someone who's going to be supplanted by Omarion Hampton sometime in the year. But he's a fun story. He called the eye injury superficial, quote unquote. I don't think you're out of practice for over a month and a half with just a superficial eye injury. I dig metal out of a construction worker's eyes basically on the daily, and they're fine the next day. So that is what I would call a superficial injury. Whatever happened to him is not, I don't think, superficial. But I cannot wait until he gets on the field, puts a helmet on, and we'll see if he has one of those really deep, dark black visors that you still just cannot see his face. He takes the helmet off on the sideline, and he puts like a mask on. I don't know. It's just really funny. I'm glad that he's doing better. I'm glad that he's going to get to play and do the job that he has spent his whole life doing. But there's that, James. A couple other pieces of news. I don't know if we ever mentioned it on the air or if any of us really care all that much, but Micah Parsons did get traded from the Cowboys. So if we didn't mention that already, he got traded for a defensive player and then two Packer firsts for 26 and 27. He's dealing with a back injury. He's getting another epidural shot just like Matt Stafford did. You know, makes the Green Bay Packers look a little bit better, makes the Cowboys defense look a heck of a lot worse. So if we want to put a fantasy spin on this, James, those pass catchers and even Dak Prescott become that much more attractive because they're going to need to score. They're going to need to score quickly, and they are still probably not going to be able to run with their headlining back being Javonte Williams. Anything on these two stories that you'd like to throw in there, James?
You know, the thing about Micah Parsons and that trade that does interest me is thinking about how the Cowboys are going to deal with those extra draft picks, looking at their future, because that is not an insignificant thing to get for a guy who was holding out anyway. Usually when we see this sort of situation where someone is demanding a trade and has all that stuff, they kind of lose, the team loses their leverage to trade the guy. So being able to get two firsts for Micah Parsons is, I think, enormous. What they end up doing with him, it's Jerry Jones, so they'll probably fumble it, but it remains to be seen. Obviously, big for the Packers defense. I was hoping that Caleb Williams would have a breakout season this year, but the Packers getting another dog means that, you know, Bears fans' misery is going to resume. But we will see there. Bears have a really interesting week one matchup against the Vikings we're going to talk about. But look at that. That's such a Chicago fan thing to do, talk about Micah Parsons and somehow make it about the Bears. Mm-hmm. But, sure. Yeah, that's my take on that. Did we have another piece of news to talk about, or was that it?
I have two, actually. I mean, there's somewhat small, but I would suppose Devon Achane coming back to practice, he had a calf injury, he started to slip on draft boards a little bit. That is absolutely noteworthy. If he slipped to the second round, count yourself lucky, because he should be a premium running back. And if you're like myself, who got him in the third in one league, just get ready to go 11-3, because I'm really excited for that league. My running backs are Barkley, Brown, and Achane.
That's incredible. I don't know how you swing something like that.
I don't know. 10-team leagues. It makes your whole team seem so much better when there's two fewer managers.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of what I expected for Achane, but it does... I know this is kind of like a fluky thing, but I am a little worried about him as a Dolphins running back. It kind of seems like you never have any Dolphins running back for as long as I can remember last the entire season. And yeah, Devon Achane is electric and he's in a good system that benefits him in his play style, but I don't know, I just get a weird feeling. It's probably nothing. He's probably gonna be like late RB1 production, but I don't know, we just gotta see. And everybody's like predicting the Dolphins to take a step back. I don't know, but that doesn't bother me too much. I'm glad you got him in the third. That's wild how he specifically falls to the third. But mm-hmm. I think that leads well into talking about our draft recaps. I think it'd be interesting to say things we saw over the weekend, over our drafts. Things that went as expected, things that surprised us. And for me, I noticed in our league specifically that we drafted in together on Saturday night, we had been preaching punt on tight ends all summer. And it kind of seemed like our people listened. People who we are friends with actually listened to our advice. Not exactly what I saw in my other leagues, though. I saw, like, if you look at like the top five or six tight ends, for us, those guys were out by the end of the seventh. In a lot of other leagues I was in, gone by the end of the fourth. So the rest of the football world has not really taken our advice on that, and I think we are the better for it. Stu, what's your thoughts on that, or what was something you saw that surprised you?
There's always, you know, surprises to be had in live drafts from people that are just doing this for fun. But I am very, very glad that we preached the punt on tight end strategy, because, I mean, I subscribed to it. I didn't take Tyler Warren until the eighth round, which, honestly, I kind of reached for him. What I felt reached for him there. I really wanted to see if he would last till the ninth, but very happy that I took him in the eighth, because I think somebody yelled at me from across the room for doing that. You know, a couple things that I saw that were interesting, and before I get into too deep on ours, of course, we want to hear about how your guys' drafts went, what surprised you, what were you really happy to get, did you get Achane in the third, something like that. You can reach out to us on our socials, of course, you know, at Fantasy Foot Beer on X and Instagram. We also do beer recommendations. Stay tuned for later in the episode when we have a beer recommendation from a loyal listener. James and I will be both partaking in that. So if you want an opportunity to have us drink something on air that you enjoy, send those emails at fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com. So a couple of things that I saw in ours specifically. I know super small sample size, but some of these, you know, first year or second year wide receivers went a lot earlier than I really thought that they would. You know, you have some people like Emeka Egbuka that you figured, you know, he was climbing depth charts and ADP charts for weeks and weeks and weeks. Everyone's super excited about him. He ended up going in the mid sixth for us, but not too far behind him also went Matthew Golden. And just after that, Ricky Pearsall. Now, I'm high on Ricky Pearsall myself, but going ahead of the likes of Roma Dunze or Jameson Williams, or, I mean, Stephon Diggs, if you want to call him that, that was one of the things that really surprised me, because I thought maybe one of Golden or Pearsall would be available to me later on in drafts. So I was a little disappointed for that, and I think my wide receivers are a little suffering in this league, but I'm not too upset about it, James, to be honest. What's one thing that surprised you about our draft beyond what you've said already?
One thing, it's not unique to our draft, because, I mean, I've been seeing it similar trends in other leagues as well. But just the ballad and the saga of Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt. Earlier last week, I saw him go as high as the early sixth. Like, someone who had that flip took him at basically the 5-6 flip. And we did see that also in the 7th for our 12-team league there on Saturday. And I'm really curious how a lot of people are feeling, having seen the week 1 depth chart for the Commanders. And Bill is still 4th. Austin Eckler now being listed as the number 1 guy. And we know that doesn't really mean anything. Not to steal too much of what you were going to lead us off with in the next segment. But just seeing how small things can create huge ripples in the way people draft just always interests me and amazes me. Like, imagine if Najee Harris would have had that interview we both watched today, if that would have happened on, like, Friday morning, right before drafts, and people are like, oh no, Najee's coming back. Omarion Hampton is now, like, plummeting because people are going to think it's a split backfield, when it probably, I mean, it's going to be a split backfield. It was always going to be a split backfield, but just what that share ends up being, people would be scared of getting the raw end of that. So I was very interested to see how that went. And also just watching Quinshon Judkins and how people dealt with him. Obviously, he just over the course of the last month has continued to fall further and further and further and further, still remaining the only rookie unsigned, and for apparently good reason. We did see him get drafted on Saturday, and then this morning saw him instantly dropped, which I think is pretty telling based on what we've seen from him, and I don't expect him to play football this year. But yeah, sorry to steal your first point from the next segment there.
No, you're good. Actually, one thing that was interesting that I heard recently or read recently, I didn't read it all. Let's be honest, I'm a headline reader. One of the Browns beat reporters, and for trust this as much as you want to trust something like this, I don't usually trust anything until the team itself is saying it, or like someone like Rappaport or Schefter is saying it. But there is building momentum to get Quinshon Judkins, they said, back with the team, but he's never really been with the team. There's building momentum to get him with the team in the coming week or weeks. So very well he could be with the team. He's not going to be relevant fantasy-wise very quickly, having missed all of this time and really needing to build rapport with his entire roster. So the Jerome Fords and the Dylan Sampsons and all that jazz are still very much in play. But Quinshon, if he does get suspended, is going to have to deal with that too. Something like 6 games is the standard for the NFL. But at some point this year, he'll probably crop back up. he just doesn't need to be on rosters right now. So one thing I thought that might be cool, because we're kind of just hanging out, you know, there's not a whole lot to talk about. We're building up to week one. Of course, we're going to preview week one a little bit later. But I thought it'd be cool to just kind of relate, you know, what was the most surprising thing that you yourself did in the draft? And let's hear your reasoning behind it, if you can kind of set the scenes for everyone who, of course, was not part of the 12 people drafting there on Saturday. And if I could lead us off as you kind of consider that for yourself, James, one of the more surprising things I felt that I did was reach for, I call it reach, but reach out and pluck Travion Henderson in the back half of round three. So overall, pick number like 36, something like that. I don't know. It was 3.10 is the spot where I got him. And I had started the draft getting Jahmyr Gibbs and ended up getting Nico Collins in the second. Going into the third, I'm looking at people like Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow, George Kittle is even on the board there. But I really am looking forward to rooting for Travion Henderson and watching a new and re-bolstered Patriot offense alongside Drake May, who I'm really excited about but did not get my hands on. So Travion Henderson, looking out there, I saw the other two people that would be drafting between my next pick as well, thinking, there is no way these guys, one of them is going hero RB, one of them had yet to take a running back overall. He had gotten Neighbors and Jamar Chase, actually. Our draft is a little strange, so that sounds way better than what it means. But I knew that Travion Henderson was not making it back to me, so plucking him, even over the likes of Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow, and George Kittle that all went after him, I felt a little bit sketched out by even in the moment there, but looking back on it, I don't regret it at all, because I really do think Travion Henderson can be in the top 10 of running backs if things fall his way and he gets a little bit of the reception work out of the backfield, an area that Ramondre Stevenson is not exactly proficient in, James. So that was one thing out of my draft that, you know, I went on the limb a little bit. We'll see how that pays off for me, but have I given you enough opportunity to look at something that you thought was the most important or, you know, most surprising thing that you personally did?
Yeah, so I rocked in this draft with the double RB strategy, which I kind of knew I was going to do this. I had experimented with other different things in mock drafts for this particular one. And I'm really pretty happy with the way it turned out. I guess you could call it a reach in the first round. I reached for Derrick Henry, which no one made any comments about it in the moment, but I think you could say it's controversial. He's been he's had wildly ranged preseason rankings. People who think he's like as high as number two, and people who think he's as low as like mid RB two. And I'm just giving my vote of confidence there with him, as I stated when we broke down the AFC East or North there. So I'm pleased that I did that. I passed up on Devon Achane, like you were talking there. Took Derrick Henry over him. And I don't think I'm going to be sorry for it. Maybe he proves me wrong. Maybe he tears his ACL week one. And the fact that he's over 30 is going to just shoot me in the foot, and everybody who says 30-year-olds can't do anything is right, as we now enter my birth month when I'm about to turn 30. I was really pleased with the receivers I was able to get in the subsequent four rounds also, Derrick Henry, Chase Brown, and then I took four wide receivers in a row, and I got Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Garrett Wilson, Cortland Sutton, and Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith, I was especially excited about that he dropped me in the sixth. That was exciting for me. I'm also really excited about some of the late-round dart throws I took, like Jaden Higgins in the 11th. Guys who are going to step in immediately into a big role in that Texans wideout room, opposite Nico Collins. Guy who's got an 80-inch wingspan, which is incredible. I took Woody Marks too. Apparently, I'm a Texans fan this year, but yeah, I'm just hopeful. I'm I'm feeling hopeful about things, and I'm sure the fact that I took Kyler Murray in the eighth as my quarterback isn't going to hurt me at all, and is not going to dash any hope at all. But
that was your move that surprised me the most, was that you would willingly go into that sort of situation.
Yeah. That, and the only one I really question besides that is, I was between Garrett Wilson and Marvin Harrison Jr., and I feel like I probably should have taken MHJ, but I took Garrett Wilson because of the body of work type thing, but I don't know. We'll see how it works out.
Honestly, I might have gone MHJ there, especially if you had it in your mind that you were going to get Kyler. Not that that's a very exciting stack.
I didn't have it in my mind that I was going to get Kyler. I was actually targeting Baker Mayfield in the next round, but got sniped. But best laid plans. Yeah.
Thanks, Ethan, for sniping him. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Who is our... Ethan is also our beer recommendation person today. So
that's true.
We'll get to him later.
But yeah.
All right. Stu, you want to talk about some week one stuff?
Sure. So, of course, it's football time. We got a preview. We got to get excited about things. There's going to be start sit questions even in week one that we could probably help with if you reach out to us and see what you want to start out with. It's all a guessing game in week one, so just go with your heart. But, you know, it's pretty soft news cycle for us on social media in the last couple of days with teams releasing their last official depth chart, and now people are freaking out about certain depth charts. So I thought I'd bring it up. A couple of things, whether we think this is all smoke or noise or if it's actually meaty stuff. But, you know, I've seen some people really start to freak out. And you kind of prefaced the first one earlier about Bill or Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt. The Commanders released their running back depth chart. Topping the list is Austin Eckler, which is not too surprising. The veteran's still really, really good. Second was, is it Jeremy? Jeremy McNichols? And then third is Chris Rodriguez, and fourth is Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt. So if you took him in the fifth, maybe you don't feel very good about that. But James, I think I'll just get this out of the way. I think most of these depth chart pieces are just noise. A lot of it is, you're the rookie, you're the new guy, you got to earn your keep. These are the guys that have been around. McNichols was here in the last couple of years. He's going to be second on the depth chart, and you can work your way up. I don't think this means anything. I don't think people need to be falling to their knees in Walmart or something over it. If you've ever heard that term comes up on different sites very frequently. But do you think this is noise, or are you actually worried about Bill Nye, the running back guy?
I mean, I don't think I was going to start Bill if I got him anyway, just because of where he was taken. If you reach for him in the fifth, you're probably going to have to start him at that point. And, you probably are falling to your knees in Walmart here. But do I think it's noise, or do I think it's something to take seriously? I'm somewhere in the middle. Depth charts don't really mean that much if they're released to the public. Depth charts are really an internal thing for coaches to use. It's not like it's not a U.S. Constitution. It's not something we're held to. It's something that's just nice for people to see, especially for a guy like Dan Quinn, who is gonna, he's been around the block a few times. He knows how to evaluate talent. He's gonna get his best guys on the field, and he's gonna get the right guys for the right moment on the field. Truth is, we really don't know what that is for the Commies yet. Austin Eckler is obviously listed as the RB1, and we know he's got a little less tread on the tires than he used to. And we know that they are no longer toting around Brian Robinson Jr. So there's a path to the field for Bill, and he's going to get his opportunities. I don't believe he's going to be the fourth running back out of the stable. I would assume he'd be like the second. But, this early in the season with a deep running back room, it's usually going to be a ride the hot hand guy. You got to see what everybody has in live football situations. So I'm not panicking. I'm also not rushing to start him. But if you're someone who did jump the shark there and try to get ahead of something, You probably don't feel too good, but I wouldn't have done that to begin with. But yeah. I love depth charts.
Yeah, there's another one. I do think this one has a little more meat to it than, of course, the Corey Karosky merit thing. But the Steelers running back depth chart, and this is after they gave running back Jaylen Warren a 2-year extension on his contract. So it's looking like more and more that Warren is going to be the number one in that offense. And people that have subscribed to the Caleb Johnson hype train, such that it was, he honestly didn't get super hyped throughout this preseason, maybe a little bit disappointed, because we got Jaylen Warren at number one, then Kenneth Gainwell, the veteran, at number two, and Caleb Johnson at number three. So over the course of the season, of course, this is not going to hold, but it all depends, I think, personally, on which running back can stay in quarterback Aaron Rodgers' good graces, and that usually means the person that's best at pass protection, which, if you have heard about this, Caleb Johnson's not the best in pass protection. So we'll have to see if he works his way into relevancy, if maybe this is going to take a little bit longer, he's not going to get quite as much of the run share. We know he's probably not going to get very much through the air, because Jaylen Warren he's usually known to do most of his damage through the air. So that one, I think, has a little more substance to it. James, anything on the Steelers backfield? Does this give you any more clarity going into the season?
Maybe a little. But I was very much in the camp of I want nothing to do with the Steelers' backfield, whether it's Jaylen Warren or Caleb Johnson. That hype train fully left me behind. But I do think that with how the Steelers typically tend to treat the running backs, at least in recent years, probably what Jaylen Warren did last year is going to be pretty similar to what I would expect this year. And Caleb Johnson, I mean, I expect him to take a small, maybe like a quarter of a step forward from what we've seen before, but I'm not expecting much, really. Pass pro, yeah, it's a good thing for a running back to be able to have, and especially if you're trying to not clue to the defense what you're doing. We can only assume if we see Caleb Johnson on the field, he's not going to be in protection. So, you know, there's that, but there's also situations where you need to get your best guys the ball. And if he's not going to be on the field in any moment, he's not the best guy with the ball. So I'm not excited about anything the Steelers are doing, really, period. I want nothing to do with the Steelers, and I want you, our listeners, to also have almost nothing to do with the Steelers. DK Metcalf is interesting, but
he's fine.
He's not a running back.
Targets, baby. Targets is the best predictor of fantasy success, right?
Right. Yeah.
Volume. Just think about king. Garrett Wilson from last year.
Yeah. Now I have to deal with him and Justin Fields. Although yes. We have seen Justin Fields support a wide receiver one before. That's what I kept telling myself.
Yes, yes. We've told Body ourselves that many, many times. That was like 2021 when we saw that. So
yeah,
I'm not exactly
really
holding
work.
My breath.
Yeah, didn't really work. Oh, no.
I don't think Fields even got drafted in our league. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's on the waiver wire.
I think he is. I think the hype for Justin Fields and fantasy for drafts is a little unwarranted. I mean, what did he show last year for the Steelers that proved to anybody he could be an effective passer?
I think he was, if you extrapolated his six or so games that he played, he would have been like QB8. But, of course, that is an incredibly woolly prediction and not really anything of substance.
Yeah. I mean, I think he might be a little more effective than Aaron Rodgers was last year, but I'm not, like, expecting him to come out of the woodwork and light the world on fire. I don't know.
It's also the Jets.
I like Justin Fields.
It's just the Jets. It took me many years to realize, you know, looking for fantasy success in the Jets is a slippery slope. Because they will disappoint you almost every time.
Yep.
All right.
Jets is
well,
the Jets.
Moving right along, we're talking about week one. Finally, some meaningful football being played, James. We thought that we would pick out maybe 1 to 3 players, storylines, teams, things that we are really, really looking forward to and will definitely be keeping our eye on come Thursday, Friday, and Sunday, Monday. Would you like to go ahead and lead us off, James? Is there one player, situation, storyline, trend that you are really keeping your eye on?
Yeah. There are many storylines that I'm interested in. And for week one, a lot of them revolve around the schedule. The first thing that I was taught when being taught how to break down film for a specific position is look for the turd. So if you are an offensive coach, you're looking for the turd in the defense that you can exploit. And it's similar in fantasy football. When you're looking at schedules, you're looking for the turds. You're looking for the lopsided matchups. And we do have several of those in week one. Eagles-Cowboys should be a turd for your opening Thursday night football. If you got Eagles, prepare to feast. Same with Bucks-Falcons. I expect to see some exciting things from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Baker Mayfield to Mike Evans, and hopefully a good peppering of Emeka Igbuka there. Excited about Bengals versus Browns. We did see a little bit of weirdness in the offensive line for the Bengals during the preseason. So, you know, getting a start against the Browns is probably for the best. And I'm excited to see Joe Burrow light it up there. Commies versus Giants. Not much to expect out of the Giants defense. So maybe when we're all going to be watching that game for the Jacory Kroski Merritt hype anyway, as well as the general Jaden Daniels hype, I think we're going to see some exciting things there. And also, lastly but not leastly, Broncos and Titans. We would love to see Sean Payton's Broncos with second-year quarterback Bo Nix take that next step. And I'm also a little bit higher on Cortland Sutton than I usually am this year, and the Titans are a great team to kick it off against. Now, it's always good to say that the defenses don't usually end up being what we think they're going to be. Your top 10 defenses in the NFL, very rarely do they do that year over year. So these six or five defenses that I pointed out as turds, there's a good chance that one of them ends up catching fire on something and ends up being good in some way. And I think if there's any of those, it's either going to be the Falcons or the Giants. I think both of those could show up and cause those teams problems, but I am excited about watching those players playing football, and also just excited to get the quad box going, you know.
Get some red zone action.
Yep, little red zone, little Scott Hansen. It's gonna be good.
Is it still commercial free now that it's been bought and all that jazz?
I don't think so. Remember last year when Red Zone showed its first commercials and the world kind of just flipped upside down?
I do remember that. Yeah.
It was difficult. Emotionally difficult.
We can never have good things.
No, apparently not.
But yeah, couple of things that I'm excited for, and I'll try to go, you did a lot of teams, a lot of big stuff. I'll try to go a little more finer. I'm very excited. You said that the Eagles should feast, but I mean, garbage time Dak Prescott is something that I want to see a lot of throughout this year. Garbage time Dak Prescott going to CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens, two of the best, maybe the best wide receiver tandem he's had in a very long time. Can't even think of one that was better for Dak Prescott, but maybe back in the day with Dez and somebody else. I don't know. So that's really exciting. I think that is going to be a super fun game to watch. And to kick off the season with a storied rivalry like that is, you know, exactly the way you want to go. Of course, we have Chiefs and Chargers. They are going to be playing overseas. Not really overseas. I mean, over the Gulf of America. They're in Brazil.
Yeah, South America.
I mean, is it overseas? It's out of the country. It's probably going to be not a very good game. You know, traveling that far, playing in an unknown place where you don't want to wear green or you might get attacked or something like that. It never really lends well. And it was the Brazil game last year that took sweet little Jordan Love from us for a long time. Anyway, so there's that. I do want to see the Giants and Commanders, as you mentioned, James, but I want to see Jaden Daniels to see if he can live up to the hype in year two. Sophomore slump is an actual thing that happens. I don't want that to happen for people's third round picks, as well as, you know, an exciting young quarterback that is leading an exciting team in the Commanders. I was rooting really hard for the Commanders last year. I still want to root for them this year. In the 49ers at Seahawks, a couple of people that I want to see: Darnold plus JSN. How is Darnold going to work with... Look, I mean, JSN's a great receiver, but I don't think he's to the caliber of Justin Jefferson. You know, is he still going to get peppered with targets? Is Cooper Kupp going to be factored in pretty heavily? Or is it going to be just run first to the Seahawks and then maybe a little bit of JSN over the top once in a while? Got to see how Darnold does behind a lessened offensive line and, in my opinion, a lesser organization. Also, that New York Giants pass rush might be getting him to see some ghosts early on in the season. You gave them a little shout out there, James. I do think they're going to be a defense that surprises, but I don't think they're going to be super fantasy relevant because they are... I don't know if you've seen their strength of schedule, but it is pretty intense. We'll have to see how that develops over the season. On the flip side of the ball, I want to see if Christian McCaffrey has the juice. You know, everything coming out of camp was saying that he is back to the Christian McCaffrey that we know, that he is explosive, he is a game changer, he's going to be well worth, you know, first overall picks in fantasy. You took him in the first round, but that was a home run swing that you took really early in your draft. I want to see if that's going to pay off for people there early on, and I definitely think it could against that Seahawks defense. Wrapping up, I don't know how much you might have talked about it, but just Vikings versus Bears. There are so many different storylines to pay attention to in that game. Ben Johnson coming into Chicago. What sort of, you know, Lions-esque, you know, trickery, fun, explosive plays is he going to bring there? Are they going to be throwing deep downfield? What's Roma Dunze going to look like in his second year? They've got rookie Luther Burden, who should be exciting. On the flip side, we got J.J. McCarthy finally stepping onto a field. He's, as a second-year quarterback, he still has not done anything that we have seen overall, and we have a lot of hopes riding on him. Like, this Vikings team has deep playoff aspirations. They got a really good defense, a great running back stable. They got the best, or the second best, wide receiver in all of football. Jordan Addison's going to come back from suspension. Adam Thielen's coming back home. We need to see if DJ Hawkinson is going to be back. He came back from his knee injury, I think, late last season, and didn't score. He didn't do too much for you later on in the season. We have to see if he's going to be the TJ Hawkinson of old. But, of course, at the end of the day, we need to know if this young quarterback is going to be able to sling it enough to support all these guys and to support this team. So I'm really, really looking forward to Monday Night Football. It's just, honestly, I think a very well-scheduled week one. We've got banger games at the beginning, banger games at the end, and sprinkled in. I mean, we didn't even talk that much about Sunday Night Football, Bills and Ravens. That's going to be a power-packed game. Lions and Packers is going to be great, too. And then, of course, you got the refuse slipped in there. Jaguars, Panthers, Steelers, Jets, Colts, Dolphins, that kind of stuff. So,
man, it really is a great slate for us to be looking at. But I know we're not a gambling podcast, and we're not going to start being a gambling podcast, but I'm very curious about some of these spreads I'm looking at. If you had to guess, say we're looking at Colts Dolphins, which I mentioned before we started recording. I don't know if I'm intrigued by that matchup just because I'm a Colts fan or because I'm curious about the dumpster fire that could potentially be forming. If you were to look at that matchup, which team would you think would be favored going in?
I would say the Dolphins.
Colts are a 1.5 favorite.
They are home, which is something to be considered. The Dolphins' defense should also be, you know, horrible. But still, the Colts are going to be really bad.
But there's more here as far as weird lines go. The Bucks are only 2.5-point favorites over the Falcons. The Commanders are only a 7-point favorite over the Giants. Bengals are only a 4.5-point favorite over the Browns, and I'm thinking that's going to be a blowout. Also, Packers are favorites over the Lions. That's a weird one. A lot of weird lines, but mm-hmm. Vegas always knows things that we don't. So, I don't know. Maybe we should figure out how to take those betting odds controversies and see if they play into fantasy football at all. I don't know.
They definitely do. Yeah. I mean, the projected point totals are really good ways to figure out start sits. I mean, if cumulatively these two teams are going to account for 32 to 35 points, maybe rest those guys on your mm-hmm. fantasy lineups. I mean, if your team is throughout the course of the game going to score two touchdowns and one field goal, how much production and credible production is going to go to your specific player? But now, game totals that are in the 50s or something like that, those real shootouts, you really want to, of course, obviously, you know, take that into consideration and really target those players in your lineup. So I use those lines pretty frequently for my start sit considerations. Take that what you will. I've gotten last place in our main league for the last 2 years, and I ran a 5K on Saturday to pay for it. But yeah, there's useful information there, in my opinion.
And it was a fun 5K, right?
So I really could have gone without the hot pink short shorts. The shirt was fine. You got my wife to make a funny shirt, but it was the hot pink short shorts. Like, I was running around, and there were children out, there were old people walking their dogs, and I don't have the legs to be showing off that much. So I was really motivated to try to get that finished as quickly as possible. And I still don't think you routed that course, because that course felt uphill for at least 80% of it.
Oh, that's part of the reason why that was intentional.
I'm sure it was. It was.
I also wanted you to have a nice scenic view of the town, and I think I gave you that.
No, that was really good. That lake you had me run around in Glen Ellen, mm-hmm. that was nice. I could have gone without running right past people having their brunch on the outside of restaurants. Me just flashing by in a bright yellow shirt with pink short shorts, with the letters BBFL printed across my butt. Anyway, so why don't we wrap it up, James? I mean, we're at 40 minutes. We've been kind of chatting for a little while. Anything else to say on week one, or are we ready to just get into it?
Well, we're going to drink some beer tonight, and I'm excited to drink some beer this weekend with football on the television. Stu, it's last call. What are you drinking, bud?
Well, as a shout-out to our good friend Ethan, member of the BBFL, of the original six, along with the two of us, we have something called the West Nature IPA, an American IPA from Third Nature Brewing Company in Michigan, where Ethan hails from. So he brought us a couple of six-packs, let us have them, wanted us to talk about it on the air. Really excited. I know, James, you have sampled it a little bit. Anything interesting about the beer you'd like to mention to the people off the bat?
Yeah, so I did try this beer earlier today. It is a 60 IBU, 6.7 ABV American IBA. IPA. Did I say IBA?
You did.
Is that a disease? Anyway, IPA. I did think this was a really smooth and drinkable IPA. When I first tasted it, I was like, this doesn't taste like an IPA. This tastes more like a wheat beer. But it does have like some very, very faint hoppiness on the back end, but it's very like citrus forward. And you usually get a lot of grapefruit stuff in IPAs. This one, I'm thinking like lemon, like citrusy. I like it a lot. It's real light, real drinkable. Good week one weekend beer. So I think it's a good idea for us to crack these babies in 3, 2, 1.
It's been a while since I've had to crack something for real.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
You've been on the health kick. And I'm not drinking hop water today.
Yeah, my health kick, and then I had Culver's for dinner.
I'm wondering what my most controversial decision of the offseason is going to end up being. Is it going to be the hop water? Is it going to be predicting Jackson Dart to start 7 games?
No. As time goes by, I'm really starting to come around on Jackson Dart starting more games. He's listed... okay, depth charts, doesn't matter. He's listed as the QB2.
He's going to be a stud. I just get the feeling he's going to be the guy.
I feel
not it. Not to start but... off, but he's so good. He's such a good football player. I'm excited. I'm excited for him, Stu.
I don't want them to ruin his development just because Dable's going to get fired by the end of the year. Like, I don't expect the Giants to be good, and I don't want them to force Dart into something he's not ready for just to save their own skins.
I think he can take it. I'm excited. I just want to see football, and I want to see football players playing football. Ah, Stu, football!
You're gonna max out your mic again.
Yeah, I already did. Stu, closing statement for us.
You know, we kind of just hung out a little bit. Thank you for hanging out here with us. If you want to chat with us, reach out to us on our socials. Aforementioned, it was at Fantasy Footbeer on X and Instagram. We want to hear how your drafts went. Why don't you send us a picture of your league and say, how do I rank up against everyone else's? You know, our opinions don't matter, but of course, you got a grade from all these platforms, and those don't matter either, so... interact with us. What was surprising about your drafts? What were you super excited to get? What was one player that you didn't expect to take, but now you're like the biggest fan of him? Because I can tell you, I am one of the biggest Travis Hunter fans on this side of the Mississippi River right now. He's going to be great, and getting him in round seven was amazing. And I won't hear any word against him. But thank you guys for hanging out. Looking forward to watching some football. Enjoy the weekend. Don't go too crazy. And catch us next Tuesday as we wrap up week 1 and look forward to week 2. It's going to be in-season fantasy footbeer, James. Take us home for the evening.
Oh, Stu, I'm so excited. I'm so ready for football. I'm so excited to go through this actual season with you and all of our listeners. It's going to be a great time. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate you. For Dr. Michael Stewart, I'm James Kemp. Good night. Good talk.